Okay, well, let's get started. Our agenda for today to review it. Today we're going to be we'll identify the status. So these first three items are our kind of our standing items, which is to review our creation of our group, to the action item review, and then to the face-to-face meeting opportunities. If anybody has any, that'll go on this week, just to remind you where to put them, and then we'll go on to the remainder of our agenda just to remind people. I'm going to remind you on requirements gathering, what Dan wanted you all to do. And then we're going to have a discussion around how to deal with this as an example, correlatability and usage patterns, and what we need to bring that to a point of useful resolution at this point in the process, which is not a final resolution, but a point of pause or understanding where we know where we're at. And then any other topics. So that's where we're at for today. So let's start with any comments on the agenda, and are there any people that are new to the call this week, have not been on before, that need to be introduced?
Sean is new.
Okay, Sean, please introduce yourself. This is the time.
Sorry, I was talking while I was muted. Sean Bohan, I recently joined Evernym. Nathan and I have been talking about the Verifiable Claims Task Force, and I am absolutely lurking today. And thanks for having me. And I will try to remember to turn off mute the next time I want to say something.
Right. And who is scribing today, since I see some people putting some things in?
I took over scribing.
Oh, you did?
Scribing. Manu. Yep.
You're not even on the list, so thank you. Not for a long while. Thank you so much. Okay, anybody else that's new today? Okay, any other comments on the agenda? If not, Manu or someone else that might know more about the status, I don't have any updates that I've been informed of. Does anybody else know where we stand on the working group creation?
No updates from W3C. There are going to be some presentations around verifiable claims at the upcoming WWW 2017 conference in Perth, Australia at the beginning of April, April 2nd, 3rd, 4th. But nothing from W3C since the last week.
And given that we don't have a green light yet, and I don't have that on my calendar, is that we're not really planning any official, other than those that are already going, any official output from this group or representation from the chairs in Perth? Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. I always wanted to go to Australia. All righty. So I won't be going unless it's a crisis. Anybody else have any insights or news on the first agenda topic of working group creation? Okay, let's move to the action item review. And let me pull that up. I believe we had the, there's a link that, I think one of the links in here, I believe it's the, is it the first, yeah, it's the first footnote below the agenda. We can go look at the action items to review. I'm just going to pull it up myself here. Sorry, my computer's dragging. If someone else has it up, identify any of the ones that you have anything to report on. Because this is the time that if we had an action item, this is the chance for us to then say, what have you done on your action item?
Yeah, I've got something to report, and also note that Johnny Crunch wants an additional agenda item to talk about something that we talked about last week. But before that, I am claiming victory on the GitHub repo for the verifiable claims playground. Ground is done. Yee-ho. Yay. Okay, so we have a playground now for verifiable claims. There are, if you go to the URL that I provided, there's a very, very basic site, but it is technically functional, meaning that it's got three different types of verifiable claims in it, an over 21 claim, a web of trust claim, and a person claim. We can add more as time goes on to these items, you know, the basic functionality is there. We've got signatures using RSA. We've got signatures using Bitcoin. We've got, you know, data normalization working. We've even got a fancy little graph visualizer working. So it's a good first step. I am trying to find the GitHub link. Somewhere. I can't find the GitHub link right now. I'll find it in a bit and send it on. But there's the GitHub repo and issues and all that kind of stuff. So if anyone knows JavaScript or HTML or CSS, please help out. We've also announced this with a number of other people that have been waiting on the site for a while.
Any questions or other than applause for getting that done? Any other questions about how to use it or how to contribute to it? Anybody on the queue here? Okay. I guess no comments on that. How about some of the other items? Anybody else, either Nate or, see, Dan's not in the call today. He is overseas, or Joe. Nate, Nate's also on. Nathan, George, and Adrian on the first item on the respond to the privacy issues. Does anybody else have anything to report on those? Okay, we're running out of guilt time, so we have only so much time to guilt you into doing work, and this is the time we devoted to it, so we'll move on to the next agenda item. If you do have action items assigned to you, please work on them and let us know. If there's something you need from others in order to be able to move that element forward that you can't do for yourself. We did set up, as you see under the footnote attached to the place where you can go to put in any places you think that once we do get created as a working group where we would want to be able to potentially collaboratively meet with, and attach ourselves to another event. If you look at that, we see we have a nice set of them now, some domestic, some international, ranging from, well, as soon as next week to clear through October. So as you identify places that you think that enough of us would want to go anyway, please put them on this list. And that way, when we do want to set our first face-to-face, we'll have a good working list to do that. So at this point, you know, the May and June dates, I think, would be more likely to be ones that will be timely for our first face-to-face. Would you agree with that, Manu? That's probably the time frame that if we get approval.
I hope so. I really hope it doesn't take until then to start a new working group at W3C. But yes,
right.
June, July, August is the current window.
All right. And at least the domestic ones, you know, we have two good choices in Mountain View, which is a lot of people can get that easily. San Antonio, which is another easy one to get to, relatively speaking, as opposed to Munich. Actually, we have two in Mountain View. So please keep adding those as you can. So we're going to take this off the agenda for the future, and just this will just be a standing list. We just want to say it twice so you'd know where to put it. So with that, any questions or comments on or things to add to that, please put them on the list. Any comments on it? Okay, let's go to the next agenda item then. So we have Well, this sort of reminder, we have this link to the requirements, and Dan really wants to urge us to go in there and read the darn things, and if what you have been imagining that's needed for this to work, that isn't in the requirements, it'll be hard for it to get into the spec. So this is kind of the time to really focus on that and take a look at that set of requirements and to be able to make sure that your industry is or interest or particular thing that you think needs to be addressed there is in fact there. We also, I think, Manu, you and I might need to talk a bit offline about this. We also have this, you know, past collection of sites and materials, which when we get a wiki, when we're officially named as a group, we'll have an official wiki. We'll probably pull all those together under that so we can all find these things from our front page. But for now, these links are going to have to do. Anyway, so this link is where these things are now sitting for the requirements. And does anybody have anything that you want to know about what this particular task is? Any requirements you think is a general category that are missing you want to mention now and either recruit others to work with you on? We'll open the floor for that.
One comment on this, Richard. We've got a nice set of requirements being added, but I'm unsure if folks on the call know how important the requirements list is. If you do not list the requirements, and we're gonna close collection of these, right? There haven't been too many people that have been adding requirements here. If your requirement isn't in there and we go through the whole process of prioritizing things and later on you find out that you have a requirement that's really important to you and you didn't spend the time to put it in the list, the group does not look kindly on that as the group has started, right? So, it's not to say that we can't add requirements, you know, half a year down the road, but the likelihood that we will add the requirement and then focus on it is much lower if we do it later on. So I'm concerned that while we have a good list of requirements, I'm concerned that the number of people adding requirements is not what it needs to be. Or we're doing a really good job of capturing requirements, but I really doubt that. I think what's actually happening is that we're missing a bunch of requirements from people that are working on, for example, like refugee health use cases or healthcare use cases. I know we haven't added the commercial use cases requirements in there yet. So just a heads up. I think, Richard, were the chairs wanting to close off requirements gather? I mean, the close
we are.
Date is today, right?
Yeah, right. So,
but I don't think we're there.
I think we'll take a little more time to put them in. I mean, the commercial things do need to be added. I'd also identify that, at least in the education space, there's also the need that in some cases, if there's an aggregate interest to know how people are using your credential, so a university or someone who produces a claim of skill or ability might in general want to know how that's being used in the aggregate without violating any PII. So they want to know from the times those claims are used, what's the general pattern of use. So there's this discussion, and I assume the commercial space will be, how can you find people who have a certain set of claims, assuming they want to be found, or they want to at least have the opportunity to be informed that someone is looking for someone with a claim like that. And I assume that's what the commercial is going to do. Manu, is that correct?
Well, there are specific use cases where we'll pick out particular requirements. But yeah, in general, you're speaking much more high level than the actual requirements going to be.
No, I am. I was just putting a category down. So that's what you mean by that category. Yep. But for those of us, I'm going to need to read through this to make sure that the kind of statistical and as well as the the idea that we might want to know in general how our credentials are being used as an issuer, if that the benefit of that bargain is available to people and they choose to participate in it, that the system will allow for that. So some of those requirements that have been discussed, I think, in the education industry, outside the WC3, within IMS Global, and within the old Badge Alliance infrastructure, I don't know that all those have been brought in. So I encourage myself and others who have not looked at these as closely as they should in the different industries to do it with that kind of view in mind. Otherwise, we're not going to have a complete list. Anyone else on Q? Okay, so we have a Q. So Joe, you're up first.
Yeah, so I definitely need to go through this, and I hear that, and I will respond to that, especially with the refugee crisis stuff. But I had a question about process. I understand, you know, we should get through this in terms of we've been having a conversation. Let's understand what our requirements are. But when we actually become a working group, aren't we going to have to revisit this again? I mean, just to be fair about how flexible we're necessarily going to have to be.
Yes, but I guess the point of this is to make sure that we can start. It won't change that much unless the composition of the group changes very greatly. Typically, these requirements lists are, you know, we get all the thoughts down and then the group prioritizes. We will reprioritize when a new set of people come in. But, you know, as with, statistics, those extra number of people are probably not going to skew what we focus on. The things that the group tends to think are really important don't tend to change much over time, unless you get, you double the size of the group, which we're probably not going to end up doing. So, yes, Joe, you're absolutely right. From a process perspective, we will revisit this. At that point, we're hoping that we've captured most of the requirements that the new folks are going to have, right? And they will be prioritized in the order that they want them in. This is more of a, for the next, let's say it takes another 2 to 3 months for a working group to start. I really hope that's not the case. But if it does, this group has to figure out what we want to focus on. And this list is going to really help us. Did that help,
okay,
Joe?
Sure. Yes, it did.
So close. So I think maybe the minutes, but it's closed. Trying to close it for now. That doesn't mean it's closed forever. It doesn't mean that it won't be edited later or reprioritized. So, so Christopher, you're on the queue next.
Yeah. So I guess my expectation was that there would be sort of a process by which requirements would be added to sort of the end of a use case process, where those requirements were then summed into this requirements document. So we haven't even completely gotten through some of the use cases to sort of flesh out the requirements that are implied by the use cases. So that's one thing. I feel like there's a miss. You know, we've jumped into, we're going to make this requirements list when, we really need to look at each individual use case and look at the requirements for the use cases, and then put those together into the requirements list. So we pick a use case a week or something, and have everybody in advance read the use case and kind of brainstorm, okay, what does that imply for requirements, and add it to the bottom of the use cases or something. I don't know. That observation. I have a second observation. There is a I don't really know what to do with it. So given that what seems to be happening as far as what our charter and purpose is going to be, there's a lot of things that are requirements that we can't define. So we have a requirement that some of this stuff can be encrypted, but that's not part of our charter. Our charter is the data format, not the data, not the signature mechanism, not the anti-correlation mechanism, and whatever. So we need to divide up some of the requirements into that. This isn't something we're going to define. It's more like we're going to make sure that we pass upstream to that in order for this verifiable claim to function, it needs these requirements from whatever systems it exists in, I guess. Does that make sense? I'm not sure if I'm expressing myself well.
No, I think what you're saying is making sense, and Johnny, you're next in the queue to get you in a second. Johnny Crunch is next, but we have discussed this, and we think the use cases should individually inform the generic. So since we want to have a use case for every possible future use of this, we have to make sure we're rolling it up to the requirements in a way that we only gather unique things from the use cases that are just rare to that case, but we really hope that they would be more broadly capturable as a claim statement, a statement about what the claim needs to be or do or have as associated. And if you saw how Tim responded to Tim's question about how to incorporate a certain thing like that into the work, and it's basically leave a space holder for where you put it in, saying we're going to call it this and this is where it goes. So, I mean, some of these things like the encryption scheme or the methodology that's being employed for one of these requirements, it just has to be reflected in our model and referenced there in a way that makes it workable. At least that's what we've been talking about. If there's a difference on that, please jump on queue and correct me. Johnny, you're up next.
Yeah, I think actually this ties into the discussion from last week about, I was thinking in the line of revoking the claim, but I think Christopher actually made a point of actually really the primary subject, and I think this is actually, the comment really is tangential from a few topics back about 5 minutes ago, was really the ability to refute the claim that's being made about me. And I think the example is that I happen to be triple board certified physician, but there are websites out there actually who are making claims about me that I'm board certified in pediatrics and oncology, which is not true. And so I think it was an interesting, I guess, tangential now actually thought that actually I just wanted to make sure I got in there. And then it really has to do about the, off topic now, regarding the requirements.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that. You say the other thing you want to say is off topic, and you want to come back to it later. You mean the agenda item you wanted to add about the subject?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we'll come back to that. Manu, you're up.
So a quick response to what Christopher said. So I think we have to be really careful as a group not to spend too much time on the use cases. And I'm not saying anyone's suggesting we do this, but the more time we spend in kind of the theoretical generic space and we don't implement, the more people we're going to lose. Right. So my concern is always we lose the people that are most important for a W3C rec, and that is the implementers. If we don't start dealing with stuff that's implementing, right? So, use cases are not implementing, requirements are not implementing, right? We need to start shifting our focus to implementing, which is why we're getting some of these requirements down so that we can order them in the order that the people implementing think they're most important. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't want to do a good job of gathering requirements and gathering use cases, but if we start spending another 3 months talking about use cases and not implementing, that is recipe for disaster in a working group. So I'd like to, my personal preference is, shift to the more practical and implement and deploy rather than, doing a thorough analysis on the use cases and deriving requirements. I think getting things roughly in good shape and then implementing is far better than coming up with a beautiful design for the use cases and the requirements. Again, I'm not suggesting anyone saying that, but I'm afraid that we're going to fall into that trap if we don't start implementing and deploying soon.
Okay.
checking the queue. Thanks, Menno. I tried to capture just a little bit of what you said, but please add your own notes to that. It says the queue is empty, but Christopher, I thought Q Plus should put you on. So, Christopher, please
sure.
Go ahead if that's what you wanted. Yeah.
Okay, so I can understand. I mean, I've certainly got the implementation itch, which is why I applauded on the verified claims credit, thing. But I do have a concern, sort of the second half of my previous thing that didn't quite get picked up on. There are a lot of things in order to meet what we need to do, which are out of scope for what we think the working group will be approved for. Things like protocols for requesting or receipt, or searching for claims is out of scope. Anti-correlation methods, out of scope. Encryption, out of scope. Signatures, out of scope. Timestamps, out of scope. So we have a long list of things that for the system to work from an implementation point of view that are out of scope from the working group. And I think we need to basically be able to say, hey, here's, in order to implement these data standards external to this working group, here are some requirements that we are not responsible for, but we want to be sure we don't get in the way of. So for instance, there are certain things we could do, improperly, or without, forethought that could make things more correlatable or make it more difficult for certain correlation things, options to be selected. So I don't know I don't know what the process is by which to sort of differentiate these two different, these categories. Because there are things that are when I read through that, even the beginning of that requirements list, there's a lot of stuff there that isn't about the data format.
Well, that's a good question. Manu, you're on the queue to respond to that, but it's a good open question how we deal with that.
Yeah, I think, Christopher, the simple answer to that is just write down all the requirements that you have right now, and we will split them into the requirements that we can work on in the working group and the requirements that many of us will work on outside of the working group. Right. So just because the working group isn't chartered to work on this stuff doesn't mean that implementers won't go ahead and do it anyway. Right. We already have a number of organizations that are on the call today that are working on protocols and stuff, outside of just the verifiable claims data format. And I expect that work to continue. Like, for example, rebooting Web of Trust is a great example of, we're not going to tie our hands on what a W3C working group can and can't do. We're going to work on the problems that need to be solved, right, at rebooting Web of Trust, right? So, getting the list of requirements down, even if it's a protocol issue, even if it's a signature issue, even if it's anti-correlation issue, we can always sort through the requirements and basically say, these are requirements on the data format, and this is a requirement on the protocol, and we'll just move it to a separate section of the document. All that to suggest that, even if you have a protocol requirement, write it down there so that we're tracking it. And that'll carry forward. It's not like that requirement's going to disappear. It's just going to go in a different section in the requirements document.
Yeah. I would suggest then that if you think that it's a protocol requirement or something like I saw a bunch of stuff about revocation, and the problem is there's many different ways to do revocation, and a lot of them have nothing to do with the data format. So there's that it'd be nice to write, hey, this is a protocol issue. We need to be capable of revocation, but beyond that, here are the protocol things. It would be nice that if the protocol did for it. I just don't want to, I kind of feel like we ought to be able to be done with the data format thing really quick. I'm more worried about the protocol work items that are outside of the group. So that's it.
Okay, the queue is empty on this, so I think we've gone over our time for this particular item, but it kind of tees up the next item anyway. Any other comments on this? So even if it's outside of our work, the request now is that you go ahead and put it in the requirements. If you want to annotate it to say, I understand this might not be within our effort, but needs to be coordinated, you can say that in your requirement. You need to coordinate with others who are developing a protocol or developing one of the other things you mentioned in your list. So I guess you could identify that, but we still need another requirement. Man is asking you to put it in the requirements list. Any other comments or questions on this topic before we move on?
Real quick, Richard, I added a section called protocol requirements in the requirements document. So please make note of any protocol requirements there.
Okay. So the next thing is to talk our way through this issue a little bit, and the people that are working on correlatability of usage patterns and in the different kinds of cases we can imagine it, to see what exactly do we need to do to fill in the data model specs. We're really focused on eventually we need a data model to fill this in, and we need proposed text. So the emphasis here is to say discussing this is, you know, helpful. Eventually, this is the end we need to achieve. We noticed that we've had some decent discussion. Now we're trying to identify what does it take from those of you who've been involved with this discussion to bring it to the point where we can write the kind of language that we need that will go into the data model spec. What are the issues that are holding us up? What are the issues that need more focus? Insert other relevant questions here for those of you who have been working on this.
Sure, I'll jump in if no one else on the queue there. So part of what happened, so I'm the assignee on this issue 12, and part of what happened was I went in and looked at that issue, which was about a specific section. And after the discussion, it seems to me the whole privacy consideration section didn't quite flow with what I wanted to write in that section. So the scope of what, I guess, to address my concerns I need to do became a lot bigger, and that just became a little bit indigestible. So I guess maybe a way to respond to that is I'm curious who drafted that first pass. And maybe understanding more sort of what that direction was intended to be might address some of my concerns. I don't know.
Is your question who drafted the first pass, as in we need to, you know, this is a an issue to be resolved, you know, like this was the pull request on, or whatever we paraphrase says, is number 12. I mean, who wrote it in the first place? And what was their intent? Is that what you're asking?
Specifically, yeah, section 5. So to me, that one issue
five,
about
right.
correlatability
okay.
of usage bubbled up into, oh, there's this whole perspective on privacy, and I'm a little bit at odds with some of the framing there. So, you know, I don't want to – it sort of seemed like what my task came was, oh, well, go present a pull request that might rewrite all of 5 or suggest changes throughout 5, and that seemed a little aggressive. So – you know, I hesitated, and there's other work on my plate, so that was kind of why I got bumped in priorities.
Yeah, I'm the person that edited or created that first pass edit. So, Joe, to be specific, the request isn't rewrite or reword section 5. It's much more specific than that. Let me find the exact section. This correlation. So it's specifically this section here, right? Identifier-based correlation and maybe signature-based correlation. It's section 5.3 and 5.4 tops. Nothing else.
Well,
so the purpose of the
Hold on, I need to interrupt because the issue is actually about 512 usage patterns. So I think
I'm sorry.
I think you're hitting exactly on my point, which is that there are many places here where this topic needs to flow through.
Yeah. So sorry, let me clarify, I got confused. It is just on 512, and that's the only section to focus on right now. Otherwise, the problem, as you described, becomes too big, right? So just focus on usage patterns, how you use a verifiable claim, and the correlatability dangers there. Understanding that there are other sections for identifier-based correlation and signature-based correlation. And you may add even more sections on correlation in the future, right? So I think that it's really easy to get wrapped around the axle when working on these specs by trying to think about how you're going to re-architect the entire privacy consideration section rather than just write two or three paragraphs about specifically correlatability around usage patterns. So like we said, you know, the stuff that you've done and worrying, the discussion that you and Adrian have had is really, really good. And you're right, it does impact multiple sections in the privacy consideration section, but the only deliverable at this point is section 512 usage patterns, 2 to 3 paragraphs. Right? Did that help?
No, that's good, and I appreciate that reframing. So I will tackle it with that in mind.
Yeah, and to be clear, anyone else working on let me try and frame it a bit better from that. So the entire privacy consideration section, the reason it's in the specification is to demonstrate that we have thought very deeply about all of the privacy implications for verifiable claims, right? And right now we have 15 subtopics, you know, places where we think that, you know, there are privacy considerations to be had and we need to discuss those. Every issue that we have in the issue tracker maps to one of these subsections, specifically just one thing, right? And so the expectation with any one of the issues in the issue tracker is you write 2 to 3 paragraphs tops for that issue, right? Understanding that, you know, privacy is a much bigger topic, the entirety of Section 5 covers it, but, you know, as we're taking action items on these things, the only expectation is you write 2 to 3 paragraphs specifically on that issue. And then, you know, once people start putting text in the spec, we'll make multiple passes and combine and split sections as needed. But definitely don't let the work grow to the point where you're just like, well, it's going to take me, you know, 5 pages to explain the issues here. If you hit that point, you're focusing on the wrong thing rather than, you know, focusing on the very specific section that's in the issue tracker. Hopefully that was helpful.
Joe, follow up on that. Is that helping more? You put you back in the queue here if you need it.
Yeah, it definitely will help me, you know, get this particular issue moving forward, and I appreciate that additional time spent and explanation, Manu. I guess my meta concern is, you know, I think my process is going to be pretty common in that I'm concerned this may not be the best way to get this written, but you know, we had set out to have, and we asked a bunch of folks to say, hey, please sign up for one of these issues and go write a section. And we aren't getting people to do that. And I'm just the first example, and this is how I struggled with, oh, my issues seem to be a bigger picture, and I understand the pushback, and I can respond and get a couple of paragraphs together. But it raises the question for me if this is, you know, is this the right way to try and get these fleshed out?
Yeah, I think we'll talk about that on our next chair's call. And anybody else who has any suggestions of ways that we can better target filling in when we assign someone, please fill this in to make sure that their task is appropriately scoped and defined. Or the calls are a chance for you to come back and say, I'm having trouble with my scope and definition on this task I've been given. Please help me narrow it. So that's another place I know. But we'll talk about it. I know we talked in the past a little bit, Joe, about this one, about whether or not the narrowing would be around places where correlatability was required by law for like a drug or other regulatory regimen. Are you covering both, the ones where there's a mandate that you have to comply with and ones where there's a privacy concern that is negotiable according to contract? Are you hitting both in this space or
well,
just
so
one
for,
of those?
For 512, the way I read it is that even if you're trying to avoid correlatability, you can be correlated because of usage patterns. That's what
okay.
this point seems to me from a privacy perspective, because we often think, oh, we do X, Y, Z, and hence we have privacy, but you didn't pay attention to that. Because of how you're using it, you may give up the privacy that you thought you had. So to me, that seems like what we want to talk about in this section.
Exactly
right.
Which is not.
And you're putting in the exception that in normal cases, we may want it so that you can't, where there's no contract agreement to allow that to occur. And it would be considered a privacy violation to do it. But in other cases, the correlation patterns that we talked in some of the last calls, that correlation of usage is actually something you can use to detect fraud or drug abuse in a prescription context, and is actually required by regulators that you be able to do that kind of analysis. Am I remembering that correctly?
So that's interesting. Yes, I do think that is a point that came out from Adrian's use case of the prescription scenario that we talked about. And I guess that is a usage pattern element, so maybe I should cover that here. So I will try and weave that in. I heard Manu voice some support that how I had framed it in terms of unintended correlation, which tends to be, I don't want to get on the soapbox about updating what the privacy conversation is. So let me just leave it at that. I will try and weave that in.
Yeah, we had an awful lot of conversation about that. I didn't want to leave it on the table if it was relevant to this. Okay. The queue's empty. Anybody else on this topic of what would be needed to finish this one? Because kind of sort of wrapping these up in this way is the work we want to focus on. So, this discussion is what's valuable about this time that we all have together. So we're trying to use this as a little model case of saying, all right, let's start focusing on this type of work. So, see, Johnny, I'll acknowledge you. Go ahead.
Yeah, so it's really about the potential re-identification of de-identified claims, and that the usage of the aggregation that is actually concerning us, because it's not like either a unique identifier which is used that actually it's uniquely identifies. It's actually what you perceived as de-identified person identifiable information that actually it's aggregate. So I don't think it's unintended. I think it's purposely re-identification. I think in the issue tracker 12, actually, my comment was about the example of Governor Weld from Massachusetts and how they actually they were able to re-identify him at discharge from a hospital. I suppose it's context of who's actually attempting to re-identify.
So is your addition you want us to capture as sort of that you would like Joe to capture as the sort of the motive or permissions or
right, because I think that makes
reason,
I think
reason
first,
why yeah go ahead.
Yeah, because I think the topic is about usage patterns, but it's usage patterns by whom? Is it the people who buy the prescription habits of prescribing providers? Is it who's the potentially using this information for re-identification? I suppose that would help set the stage for describing that section.
Right, and in fact, I think we know of two use cases. I like the one you brought in of Wells, where in Wells' case, Wells doesn't want the re-identification. And in other cases, in the you know, prescription and in the prescription use case, we explicitly need to allow for usage pattern analysis to see if people are being overprescribed.
And I think the privacy concern is that what we perceive as being de-identified information through the usage patterns can actually be re-identified, and I think it's a false sense of security that, oh, well, we've been, that, 43-year-old male from zip code 37202 who happened, if you use the my voting registration, will know, you know, how I voted in the last election because I bought alcohol. So it's a stretch, but actually I think that encapsulates the potential re-identification, where I thought that information about me was actually was de-identified and I had the ability to not be stalked based on who I voted for, I suppose.
Right.
Manu, I think you're next up in the queue.
Let me check,
just make sure. Sorry, I put myself in the queue by accident. Sorry, just make sure who's up. Yep, you're up. Go ahead.
Yeah, really quickly to answer, John. Typically, W3C docs, when they talk about stuff, they talk about the quote-unquote user, the person using the system, and I realize that that's a bit, it could be, you know, the prescription, the pharmacy, it could be the person that got the prescription in the first place, it could be the doctor. Just be clear when you talk about who you're talking about in the spec. It usually defaults to the person using the verifiable claim. Meaning like, you know, the end user. W3C tends to have an end user focus. But typically, you know, if you need to, in this case, you're going to have to specifically talk about the doctor or the pharmacy, and that's fine. Also, in an attempt to help, you know, Joe out a bit on this particular one, because it is a bit sticky, talking about both sides is fine, right? Talking about, you know, when you want correlation and when you don't want correlation via usage patterns is good. Because remember, the section is just about considerations. It's just think about these things. It's not trying to come up with solutions, right? It's you know, think about correlation with respect to usage patterns. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. Here's an example of when it's good. Here's an example of when it's bad, right? And you don't have to go really any further than that. You just have to make people aware that, hey, by the way, when you use this stuff, you can be correlated, and that's not always a good or a bad thing, right?
And Manuel, I'm just going to ask a question here. So in other things, that when you draft privacy policies or other components, one helpful thing is to identify whether the particular activity is unauthorized or illegal. So when you disclose someone's private health care information by re-identification through a correlation pattern, you can also add other modifiers. It may not be explicitly legal, but it would be done to the disadvantage or surprise of the person who is so exposed. So I'm just throwing that in as other regimes that discuss this are done in a way that, you know, kind of bring those factors in as to what would be relevant to the different cases. In one case, the government can do it because it's legally authorized for them to look for this pattern. In the other case, a reporter that discloses that might have been violating HIPAA or have been doing something to expose a fact about Well, that was to his disadvantage and surprise, that was never anticipated by the system to be used in that way. And there's no legal authorization for it. Just some thoughts. Other comments on this topic? So the question we want to conclude with is, if Joe, this is yours, do you have what you need now to be able to move towards getting some language ready that we can review soon? So anything else you need?
Yeah. No, I think I'm good.
All right.
I've been started working on a paragraph here as we've been talking, and I'll get something so we can have a conversation on GitHub.
Great. Awesome. Thank you so much. So, and any comments about, you know, this, you know, type of topic and this during the calls to solve these kind of problems, this is what we're, when we discussed as chairs, what we would want to try to spend more of the call time on, this is what we wanted to focus on, is how do we get these things addressed. So if you have any suggestions about how to improve that or what kinds of things should be in this part of the agenda, please let us know. With that, I think the next person up, Johnny, would you like to go ahead and talk about your comments as well as to bring your other topic up because we're done with the previous one?
Yeah, I think I actually touched on it briefly, and I think I just, in reading through the minutes, actually really understood what Christopher was actually trying to get at, was about the primary or secondary subject, I think, about who the claim is being made. And I think just the example being that I had to think through it and actually realize that as a physician, there's actually many different companies out there who actually monetized based on posting claims about myself, and some of those claims are erroneous. And the example, so triple board certified, I'm internal medicine, clinical genetics, and medical informatics, but because I've worked in pediatric hospitals or oncology, that actually somehow they infer that I'm board certified. So there's potential misinformation out there, and I think it's less about revoking those claims than refuting those claims. And I think I think it's an interesting nuance of when in the model to actually be able to basically it's the way that they use it. Primary identifier is my NPI number, my national provider ID number, to actually to aggregate all of those. And so from the American Board of Medical Specialties, actually, it's, you know, they're harping on certification matters. But it's interesting because companies actually make money when, oh, you try to make an appointment with Dr. Holt. Click here to make an appointment with Dr. Holt. But, oh, sorry, we can't find him. He's not in our system. But, hey, we have a provider who is board certified in pediatric oncology, and you can see one of ours. So it's I think it's certainly an interesting use case, and I think I wanted to spew it out, actually, while I had it in mind about how that's just really an issue that we actually have to handle within the use cases, and I needed to flush it through to actually articulate it.
Yeah, sure.
There's a whole bunch of stuff here. So, agree.
Okay, yes, agree.
So I'm taking from that that you will coordinate with Joe in the writing of it so that you make sure that those particular factors, like, you know, knowing that someone is doing that or that they're doing it, it's a refutable conclusion that they're basing off of claims, that those kind of issues, you'll take those to the process. Okay? Is that right?
Yep.
Great.
I'll try to document it in the capturing of the requirements.
Okay, Mano, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I just wanted to. I'm trying to generalize what Johnny Krunz said. I'm wondering if this is, and I think this is a follow up to what Christopher said as well. I mean, is this a refute claim thing? Because the data model, of course, has to it has to support that. So basically, you know, the general version of this is somebody has said something bad about you, and you would like to say that's not true, right? I don't know if we really have that captured in the requirements anywhere, or I'm wondering if we even have this in the data model where you can challenge statements.
This is Chris, and I apologize. I'm in the car, so I can't add myself to the queue. But I think that, you know, I really like this concept of refutation or whatever, but its companion is sort of the other side of it, is knowing – a little bit more about the claims themselves, and that's, you know, that's the question of being able to put evidence into a claim, or if you're relying on other parties that, you know, for some of your information, being able to have the option of putting that additional information that you're relying on other parties, you know, Noah's team, Noah and Harland called evidence. And you know, that I think is going to come up more in more and more situations where people are not the first party to a claim, but they're the only party who can issue it in some cases, or have, and sometimes they have legal agency, they have a legal license to you know, and in some cases it's because of liability. So, so there's a, you know, we'd like to be able to model that in our, you know, for those people who are responsible, to say, hey, you know, here's a little bit of information you can put in, you know, what we consider a best practice for a claim, such that it allows for these kinds of things to be differentiated.
So I have one more person in the queue, and we're right at the hour. So I think we'll add this topic a little bit somewhere. We need either address refutation. I think we need to deal with this from the correlation. In some cases, is correlation that may come up with a conclusion that you would like to refute. So in other cases, the claim itself is what you want to refute. So I think we need to discuss this some more about how we deal with this. I don't think we want to get into the question of trying to resolve the dispute, because we've been arguing about that for decades, about how you resolve a dispute about some claim someone wants to make or some conclusion they've come to about you based on evidence. If they want to come to that conclusion and you're going to tell them, no, I don't like your logic, it's a bit of a swamp to wander into. But I think we should put it on the agenda for next time. Is there anything else? Joe, I have you on the queue to have the last comment here.
Great, yeah, and I'll keep it short. I think so my first response to this was refutation is statement about claims. That's a big open-ended thing. But I think this maps to what are the things that a subject needs to be able to do, because we're missing that in our tasks, in our task-based use cases. We don't say the user is allowed to do X, Y, Z in this system. And so maybe that's a framing for understanding reputation as one of the things a subject could do.
Well, or at least in the data model, have a category that's named refutation or alternative views of the subject of the claim as to what, you know, we need a place in the data model to put it. That's what I'm trying to emphasize. That's what we're trying to write things towards,
yeah,
as opposed to these overall processes. So thank you all. I'm sorry to have to cut it off, but go ahead. One last comment. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, don't put the reputation thing. This is Christopher Allen. I will not be able to make it next week. So hopefully I'd prefer to have that in 2 weeks. So,
all right, we'll do. We'll do. No problem. We'll wait till then. It will hold.
Thanks.
Okay. All right. Thank you all. Thanks. Good participation today. Really appreciate it. And we'll see you in a week. Take care.
Thanks all. Bye.
Cheers. Wow.